Jenny Mack with your daily comedy news. Vulture wrote an article, and it is called The Best Comedy Specials of 2022 So Far. You curious? I was. I'm not sure if these are ranked or not, but the first one they list is Moses Storm Trash White. Set on a stage surrounded by various junk-painted white, Storm Special is an autobiographical hour of material about his childhood that weaves together jokes about poverty, scams, class, race, and teenage mortification with a close examination of his particular family dynamics. I'm trying to remember. I feel like I watched a couple minutes of that one and felt like it wasn't for me, but okay. They also include Taylor Tomlinson's Look At You. That's a good choice. I think that came out in a period where I was a little busy. You're going to be like, hey, Johnny Mac, how come you haven't seen any of these? There's a lot of these to see. But all right, good choice there. Catherine Cohen's The Twist, She's Gorgeous. I haven't been interested in this one because of the description. Vulture calls it a Miss Piggy-esque cabaret hour. It's laden with referentiality, self-consciousness, and the style of two online perpetual commentary that drives someone to announce bridge every time the accompanist arrives at the bridging key change. Come for the songs, stay for the way director Steve Brill captures Cohen's beautiful sparkling tear as it falls down her cheek. Mike Epps' Indiana Mike. It's an hour of jokes that meander all over the place. Sometimes he's in character as an old black woman. Sometimes there's stories about his past. Occasionally, he swings through commentary on pop culture, race, or politics. There's a joke about Chappelle, for instance, spoilers, that starts with his support for his transphobic material, then quickly turns into a joke about his immense financial privilege. I would need to check that one out. Gerard Carmichael's Rothaniel, that one I have seen, and it was okay. Vulture says, though, of all the specials out this year, Rothaniel is the only one that has immediately achieved the status of required viewing. Ali Sadiq's The Domino Effect. This one has been off my radar. Maybe I mentioned it and I forgot. Let's see. Vulture says, sometimes a special takes a while to burrow into your brain, and the proof of its success only becomes clear once you've lived with it for a while. Self-released on YouTube, Ali Sadiq's The Domino Effect begins with Sadiq seated in a chair describing the way we can look back and see the exact moments when we made life-altering mistakes. His jokes, it was 1983, I'm 10 years old. Oh yeah, my mistakes started very early. The next 80 minutes are a tour de force of storytelling. This sounds pretty good. All right, that's Ali Sadiq's The Domino Effect. I guess you'll find that on YouTube. Norm Macdonald's Nothing Special. I talked about that during the week. I've got that at number 2 on my list of awesome things of 2022. The Carlin documentary right now ranked at number 1. And that's Vulture's list. Okay. I feel like it's been a pretty quiet year for comedy specials so far. But if I look back to 2021, which was definitely pandemic affected, some of my favorite things didn't come out until like after Christmas, notably Jim Gaffigan and Jimmy Carr. Also, that Lucy and Desi TV show came out quite late, so let's not judge the year here in the middle of June. It has been a busy week. Now, honestly, I'm recording today's episode on Tuesday, so I have not yet seen Letterman or Amy Schumer or Bill Burr or the Sandler movie or anything else that came out this week. I have another soccer tournament. Sometimes I gotta record these weekend episodes early. I am honest with you. Bytes, BYTE, reviewed Bill Burr Presents Friends Who Kill. The other comedians and friends that kill are Michelle Wolf, okay, Steph Tolev, Jeff Ross, Dave Attell, who's awesome, Ian Edwards, Joe Bartnick, Jessica Kirsten, Josh Adam Myers, and Ronnie Chang. They write, the show starts off with a 10-minute set from Bill Burr himself. Before he showcases friends and colleagues, he gets straight to the point and shares his thoughts about the pandemic. And expect there to be less traffic now that a lot of people have been pulled away from this world with the COVID waves. It can be found insensitive by some, but he recovers by showing empathy for the doctors who had to deal with the numerous self-claimed pseudo-doctors. However, soon he lands himself in a foot-and-mouth situation with his declaration for his love of guns. It can be considered controversial due to the recent school shooting, but the show was filmed before it happened. Burr then introduces the first comedian, Michelle Wolf. She does 10 minutes in which she makes fun of white women because it's easy and fun, but in the hindsight, it's degrading to all women. The next stand-up is Jimmy Carr. I didn't know Jimmy Carr is in this thing. I should stop recording a podcast and go watch this. The reviewer did not enjoy Jimmy Carr, who's followed by Steph Tolev. Her animated, exaggerated voice makes jokes about dating in LA with her gargoyle-like physical mannerism. Fascinating. The mics then pass to Jeff Ross and Dave Attell, and they do their set bumping mics. Ian Edwards comes on and makes snide remarks about gender reveal parties and some more pandemic jokes. Joe Bartnick doesn't stand out that much. Ouch. Jessica Kirsten with her high-pitched eccentric set. The closing act is done by Josh Adam Myers and the band The Goddamn Comedy Jam, where he sings a song with comedic lyrics. And lastly, Ronnie Chang closes the show by singing Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. Bill Burr Presents Friends Who Kill does not stand up to the expectations, considering the comedians who are featured in the show. In the middle of the runtime, it starts to feel dull and rushed in some cases. Ouch. Joe Bartnick is not even memorable enough from his set, and one could easily forget he's even in the lineup. And I believe Ronnie Chang should have been given some time to perform his set instead of a song. Huh. Sounds like it's not good, but I'm also curious about it. The Interrobang writes about Ari Shaffir. Now, I'm going to comment on their headline because I think it informs the article. Their headline, Bad Comedy Inspired Ari Shaffir to Turn Jew, that's the name of his special, to turn Jew into a killer hour special, and you need to see the taping this weekend, okay? So remember that headline. It was Bad Comedy Inspired Ari Shaffir, because I think it's kind of a loaded headline that informs this article. The Interrobang writes, comedian Ari Shaffir is finally filming Jew, his explosive and hilarious fourth comedy special, this weekend, tonight, and tomorrow in Brooklyn. After several of the shows sold out, Shaffir and team decided to add more seats, so you still have a chance to see it. The Interrobang then fawns over Ari Shaffir, writing, Shaffir is known for going places others wouldn't dare. He's confident, bordering on cocky. Truly doesn't give an F if you get your feelings hurt over his jokes. He's also not an a-hole and doesn't throw words around cheaply for shock value. He wants to shock you and he will shock you, but not without purpose, not without making you laugh. He's a pro and he's done this before. Shaffir has made this special about his own history growing up as an Orthodox Jew and taking the audience deeper into the community than anybody has ever before. As both an insider, Shaffir was born, raised, and educated Orthodox. And as an outsider, after 2 years at yeshiva, he left his religion behind, becoming an atheist. Shaffir is the perfect person to examine, pull apart, and skewer the absurdities of religion. That sounds good. Now, remember that headline about bad comedy? All right, the Interrobang writes, Shaffir said he went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with a storytelling show. That one was called This Is Not Happening. And he described his trip as his Beatles go to India moment. Shaffir said he would see everyone doing theme shows, one man or one woman shows, but he wasn't impressed and he knew he could do what they were trying to do. He said the themes were more of an artifice than a legitimate motif, and he didn't think they went for laughs. Shaffir says bluntly, they all do themes there, but they suck. They're just not funny. Shaffir thinks there's a few guys who do it right, but most of them don't. It's because they all come out of theater. That's their stand up there. So they're like still living in that world. And I'm like, ugh. Then when you've seen it, you've seen the effing Hannah Gadsby, you know? And she got derided here mostly because they just didn't understand the theater thing. Yeah. And I just don't like that style. It's just like, you can be funny in this. There's no reason not to. So he wanted to blend the best of New York style stand-up with the idea of a themed hour and show Edinburgh how it's done. I was like, I'm going to come back in 2 years. I'm going to show you what an American hour looks like. Plan was to do that and then show them what a theme would be like if they made it effing, you know, America funny. So he admits that he made this special Jew out of spite. I don't want to hide from that. I'm really trying to throw it in their face. Ari Shaffir, Jew, tapes at Roulette on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn tonight and tomorrow. Sounds like there were some tickets available. You can go to arishafir.standuptix.com and use code JEW to get a $5 discount. I don't know if it's because Hacks is out or there's a PR campaign. I'm always suspicious of the PR campaign, but Hannah Einbender is getting a lot of press lately. Variety spoke with her. I think part of this, honestly, is Lorraine Newman is her mother. It doesn't mean Hannah's not funny. It doesn't mean Hannah's not talented, but face the facts. If you've got a famous parent in the industry, you do get some breaks because somebody knows somebody. Somebody knows an agent or somebody knows an audition. It's a lot easier to get these things. You still have to be talented. I'm not saying anything about the talent. You still have to be talented, but the connections do help. It's a lot easier to find out there's an audition if you've got the right agent or somebody knows somebody than if you're sitting in your basement recording a podcast. You know what I'm saying? Variety spoke to Hannah Einbender and said it's unlikely she'll ever forget her auditions for Hacks. So far, I've only seen the first episode of Hacks. I enjoyed it very much, as I've mentioned a few times this week. It's a lot to watch, and I got other stuff that I do, including soccer tournaments. Not only did the audition land Hannah the role of Ava opposite Jean Smart, but the entire process happened during COVID. Hannah said, I went to a physical casting office in Santa Monica a couple days before that initial COVID lockdown. I read with somebody in the office a couple days later, COVID hit, and I found out I was going to do a callback, but they didn't know how it was going to happen. It took like 2 months for me to do a callback that I did over Zoom. It was bizarre. She was eventually summoned for an in-person chemistry read with Jean Smart. It was a completely empty soundstage, dark with no lights and just two interrogation lamps and two chairs. They had to sit 10 feet apart, and there was clear plexiglass between them. Hannah says, it was all bizarre, but the truth of it is it's all I've ever known. All I've ever known is this and COVID sets because I really haven't worked in this side of the business until now. So it's all been this thing that everyone's like, it's crazy. And I'm like, what was it like before? Vulture wrote an article about Hacks debating whether or not it's funny. Jackson McHenry writes, "It's thrilling for me to be given the platform to share my long-held opinion that, yes, Hacks is bad." I disagree, Jackson McHenry, but Jackson says, "My relationship to the show is like my relationship with cilantro. Ugh, many people I know and respect keep saying they love its flavor, but it tastes like soap to me." That's Hack writing, Jackson McHenry. It's terrible. All right, I got to go there. Also, in this Hacks thing, they started talking to Nicholas Kwa. Nick used to write a podcast newsletter called Hot Pod, and suddenly he's judging comedy shows. Love Vulture. I cite Vulture on here a lot. This particular article, who's writing this and why? Jackson McHenry writes, "I love Gene Smart. I like the concept of a show about the compromises you make working as a comedian, but Hacks doesn't have the deftness or critical perspective to pull its setup into something compelling. Most of the dialogue is clunky and the characterization is rote. Deborah feels like an outside-in replication of Joan Rivers that misses her core. Ava might as well be a collection of quirks described in Shouts and Murmurs in a Shouts and Murmurs piece about the youth. I find everything involving Statler's character's obsession with Paul W. Down's agent so broad it's grating. Most of the supporting roles are filled with stock characters. I cannot forgive the sin of casting Laurie Metcalf and then giving her an Aunt Jackie pastiche. The best compliment I can give Hacks is that it seems like there's a much sharper show trapped inside of it screaming, 'Let me out!' You know, sometimes it's okay if a TV show is just fun and you watch something for 30 minutes and you laugh and you enjoy the characters a little and it's not deep. Not everything has to be an analysis. As for Gene Smart's character being Joan Rivers-esque, I have mentioned I worked with Joan Rivers. I knew Joan Rivers. I'm not saying I was best friends with Joan Rivers, but I knew Joan Rivers. We worked together. Been to our house. Is there some Joan Rivers and Deborah Vance? Yeah. Is there some not Joan Rivers and Deborah Vance? Yeah. It's kind of what the show is. Just watch it. It's fun. Putting my soapbox away. That's your comedy news for today. Follow the show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.